public hearing for April 28th to order. If everyone would stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Ms. Cavender, if we can have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Richard Blatner.
Here.
Commissioner Mark Bogan. Commissioner Angelo Castillo. Mr. Neil DeJesus.
Here.
Mr. Thomas DiGiorgio.
Here.
Mr. Charles Fink. Mr. Michael Riddell.
Here.
Commissioner Bill Gantz.
Here.
Commissioner Michelle J. Gomez.
Here.
School Board Member Patricia Good. Ms. Mary D. Graham.
Here.
Mr. Richard Grosso. Commissioner Michael S. Long.
Here.
Vice Mayor Rita Mack. Mr. Robert McColder.
Here.
Mr. Bernard Parnas.
Here.
Mayor Michael J. Ryan.
Present.
Mayor Daniel J. Sturmer.
Here.
Ms. Ann Castro, Chair.
Here. I believe most of the people have indicated their absences in advance.
Move to approve the excused absences.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve those that excused in second. All in favor?
Aye.
Hearing none? Objections? We're good.
I just wanted to add, I recognize that Commissioner Bogan called in. He's sick this morning, so he was in addition to the four that were listed on the request.
Thank you. Before we get ready to go to the regular agenda, I'm going to pull something a little bit out of order, and that's item PH4. So later we get to it, I don't forget to take it out and somebody moves the agenda. Deerfield has asked that we table the item. So if I could have a motion.
Table item PH4.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, it'll be tabled to the next council meeting. Thank you. Okay, now we're to consent agenda.
Move the consent agenda.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, carries. Regular agenda.
Good morning. Item R1 is the fiscal year 2017 budget. The executive committee reviewed the item prior to this meeting and recommended approval of the $1,029,700 proposed 17 budget.
It is, it's just not loud.
No.
It is on. They can't hear me?
Yeah, it's on, but it's not.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Do you want me to repeat what I just said?
Please.
Okay. Good morning. The executive committee reviewed the proposed fiscal year 2017 budget of $1,029,700 at their meeting immediately preceding the council meeting. They recommended approval of the proposed budget as it is in your package. It's less than a $9,000 increase from the adopted FY 2016 budget. And as we reviewed in the committee, that increase really results from a couple of things. Last year, the council approved and asked for additional monies to be put back in the capital budget that had been previously removed during really the recessionary times. Also, some additional funds were placed back in the travel budget. In addition to those budgetary items, the county commission approved a 3% salary increase for unrepresented employees in December of last year. So that was also part of the increase. And then the county also did a classification and compensation study for unrepresented, and also resulting in some unrepresented employees increases to salary. Planning council staff participated in that study and saw an adjustment to three positions based on that information. So that's really where the just under $9,000 increase comes from. And the executive committee, I don't know if anyone has any other comments from the executive committee that they want to review. With that, we would just ask that the council recommend approval of the proposed FY 17 budget.
So do you have any questions? Have a motion?
Second.
Mayor Ryan? Second, Commissioner Long. Before we vote, any issues, any questions for staff? Any other comments?
Madam Chair, I just move forward my comments from the executive.
Thank you, sir. Anything else from anybody who's not an executive? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, carries unanimously. Thank you. Oh, what, Ms. Grant?
Madam Chair, I was on the executive committee with Mayor Ryan, and just maybe summarize what put on the record.
Yes, absolutely, thank you. I apologize, I was just not trying to relate. Couple things. One, staff's going to, in the future, provide us the actuals for previous years so that we can track it. Two, there's an effort by the county on trying to get a potential 3% reduction. I suspect that when we look at the actuals, that's already been adopted each year through salary savings. Three, to the extent, I asked whether they needed more training or travel budget so that we could make sure we're prepared for that. Four, we talked about the impact of Broward Next, that it won't hit likely in implementation till the, into late '17, and that finally, we hope that to the extent the county doesn't put pressure on the 3%, if it happens, that the worst that we'd want to see is a single position going to part-time. We'd hate to lose the position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any objection? You want to stick with your vote? Okay, thank you. Okay, we're moving on to R2.
Item R2 is a presentation related to attainable housing. Henry Sneezak and Ralph Stone, and actually, I'm going to participate in the presentation also, but Henry's going to kick off the presentation.
Good morning. Henry Sneezak, Deputy Director of Broward County Environmental Protection and Growth Management Department. Thank you for letting us have a chance to talk to you this morning about housing and attainable housing issues. Quickly, why are we here? As you, the council members, know, back late last year, there were two items that came before you that generated a lot of discussion. One was about a change to that policy 10707, the affordable housing policy and the plan about standardizing the methodology. And then I presented to you an issue of the county commission to look into a linkage fee for non-residential new development. And at the time, there were questions about, well, how do these things fit in with the larger picture, especially what Broward Next is doing? So that's kind of what we would like to do today. I think the presentations we have total would be like between 20 and 30 minutes, not counting any questions or comments you have. So how we're going to do this is that we're going to start high and go low, I guess. First, Barbara, we asked Barbara, and she was kind enough to agree to just give you an overview of the Broward Next recommendations as they pertain just to general housing, how some of the recommendations are going to loosen up the ability for cities and the county to accommodate housing in the county, especially in activity centers. And then we'll switch to housing affordability, and we asked Ralph Stone, our Housing Division Director, to come and just once again talk about why that's a big issue in the county now and in the future, just the housing affordability. And then I'll come back up and talk about the Broward Next initiative again, but just focusing on attainable housing recommendations. And then the last thing is just to give you an update on the linkage fee, where we are. Some of you've seen before, but I'll just give you an update on where that is, and that'll be our presentation. So with that, I'll turn it over to Barbara.
Good morning again. When Henry, Ralph, and I were talking about this presentation, the reason that we're starting with kind of the Broward Next, the summary of really the new criteria for the land use plan is because this is some of the big picture items, and these are some of the things that are really refocusing the plan on how to create additional housing opportunities throughout the county. So I'm just going to take you through a quick summary of how some of these new policy and criteria ideas will work. The first thing that we're proposing is to eliminate flexibility zones. Right now, the county is divided into almost 125 flexibility zones, so we would replace those with just municipal boundaries. So right there, we're freeing up any flex or reserve units that exist. The second piece of that is carrying over those existing flexibility and reserve unit pools. We've been looking at, so there would be no net loss to the municipality. So however many units were authorized as part of flex and reserve would remain in the municipalities, and now they would have the ability to use them throughout the municipality as opposed to only within the zones, because we do have some municipalities where it seems like these units are kind of trapped, for lack of a better term, because there's no real opportunities to allocate flex and reserve there. The third piece of this, the flex zone, the flex and reserve units maintaining, carrying over and maintaining, is the authorization of a new pool of units. And the idea behind that is right now we're calling those redevelopment units. When, a little bit back in history, as the county plan was established and flex and reserve concepts moved forward, those are really the differences between the county and the city plans. And then reserve units are additional units that were available above and beyond that. So while we're freezing those and carrying them over for use and no net loss, we'll authorize a new pool of units, redevelopment units. Right now, we're looking at approximately 3% of units. There's approximately 1 million units, just over 1 million units available on the county plan, which would equate to almost 40,000 units for the 3%. So we'll be authorizing new units for municipalities to be able to use for redevelopment and economic opportunities. Really looking at prioritizing the plan to really focus on downtowns and transit corridors and transit hubs, transportation corridors. These activity centers are really where a lot of the municipalities are finding its development and opportunities. So we really want to queue that up and make sure that that's where redevelopment and housing opportunities are prioritized. Authorizing the Municipal Transfer of Development Rights Program. This was kind of the impetus for Broward Next. This was the idea that kind of started the Commission and Planning Council authorizing this idea, but making sure that municipalities can participate in that program. Also, the ability to transfer not only residential but non-residential development rights and preserving some sort of open space or public use behind it. Another really important criteria for the activity centers relates to right now, you know, there's adopted permitted uses in the county plan, and they're many of them are on transportation corridors. So right now, if a municipality wants to increase the pool of permitted uses, whether those are housing uses or non-residential uses, they have to do a county land use plan amendment. So we're developing a tool that would allow for a percentage increase in density and intensity that could occur via a local amendment only and then be recertified by the Planning Council. And we're looking at a percentage increase that could happen every 5 years or so. So for example, if an activity center allows 1,000 dwelling units in the adopted countywide land use plan, every 5 years that would be, could it be available, there could be an increase available for that. We're talking about between 10 and 20%, and it would have to go through the local amendment process, demonstrating sufficient facilities and services, and then being recertified here. So that would be another tool that municipalities would be able to use. Attainable housing density bonuses. Right now, that rule is tied to the use of flexibility units and flexibility rules. So the new Broward Next would actually allow, if you are committing to a very low or moderate affordable unit for a period of, we're also changing the period of years from 30 years to 15 years, but if it's tied to that 15 year, you would be able to access those density bonuses without having to allocate any flex reserve or the new redevelopment units to that. There's also a proposal as part of Broward Next to treat efficiency type units differently. Right now in the plan, if you have one efficiency unit or studio, it's counted as one full dwelling unit. There's no exception in the plan. So we're looking at a revision to the density calculations, kind of like we do for hotel calculations right now, where basically an efficiency type unit would count as a half of a dwelling unit. And all of this is actually proposed in the context of sufficient facilities and services being available. Potable water, sanitary sewer, schools, drainage, transportation. So I don't want to lose sight of any of that as we're kind of going through things that are going to loosen up the plan and provide additional housing opportunities, that they're still focused on sufficient facilities and services as part of this. A last couple of things, these criteria are really, you know, talking about the integration of smart growth and complete streets principles. This goes back to transportation and transit corridors, also promoting residential opportunities along those corridors, and then the revision of plating requirements. Currently, there's an exemption in the county plan. If you're building up to two dwelling units, you're automatically exempt from plating, and then there's also an acreage exemption, and we're talking about increasing the acreage exemption, which would likely impact some of these smaller infill development for residential units that we've seen, increasing from five units to 10 dwelling units. So that was where we just wanted to start to give you kind of the really highlights of what we're proposing as part of Broward Next that will really increase and influence the dwelling unit and the residential opportunities throughout the county. Ralph's going to pick up with a review of housing attainability in Broward County, the current status.
Before he starts, does anybody have any questions of what she just went over with Broward Next? Go ahead, Ms. Graham.
Is there a PDF that we can have?
Sure, I'm going to send this PowerPoint, I should have said that too. I'm going to send this PowerPoint out after the conclusion of the meeting so everyone has access to all of the information. Do you prefer a PDF or do you want the PowerPoint presentation?
Whatever is easiest, just okay. Pay attention to what you're saying rather than trying to take notes.
Sure, yeah, I definitely, we just didn't have it quite ready for the mail out.
And real quick hits is if you had flexibility zones within a jurisdiction of a city, now the whole city is the flexibility zone, for lack of a better way to express it. You can use your flex units anywhere you want. You do not have to come back, provided all the other, you know, roadways and schools and everything are in place, to come and get to the county for any other permission after that, correct?
Well, right, for the flex zone.
For the flex unit.
For the flex zone. Well, in the redevelopment units, what we're proposing, there may be a process to go through the county for access to those additional 3% units.
To go beyond what you're using.
Right.
Yeah, I understand.
Right. Yes.
What were some of the other major hits, just real quick?
I think one of the really important things is the regional activity centers, because so many of those are along transportation corridors. So this increase that municipalities can implement without having to do a county land use plan amendment. So they've gone through the process to establish the activity center. And like I said, generally those are along transportation corridors. And they would be able to do a local amendment to do a percentage increase to the densities and intensities of that. And we're looking at a time frame for every 5 years, because if they wanted something in the interim, then that would be cause for a county amendment, clearly, if they can't accomplish it throughout that increase. But I think that's a big deal.
No, it's huge. So again, the mechanisms are in place, though, for issues of regional impact, such as transportation, school concurrency, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it will free up a lot of things to be done at the local level.
Madam Executive Director, it may also be helpful. We know some of us here were at the Ad Hoc Steering Committee meeting last week, and I know with those agendas you forwarded out to the members of the Ad Hoc Steering Committee. Mm-hmm. It may also be helpful on the larger sense to have those emails distributed to all the members of the Planning Council, because that way they'll see before it comes here, let's say for this, what's mm-hmm. been happening, and have, I don't want to say the backstory, but more sure. of the detail.
Good point.
May come out today, and they will conceivably have had an opportunity to see the documents and raise questions today if they have.
And see the whole picture.
Right.
Okay.
Nothing else? Oh, it's a good thought. We all liked it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay,
Mr.
Well.
Stone.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Council members. I just have a couple of slides I'll share with you, and for the most part, these are items that y'all have seen previously. Which button? The first is just a reflection on where we stand as far as renter demand and cost burden. You can see that of 381 metro areas in the country, we're ranked seventh. And I have a little more updated data that I'll share with you that just came in the last month or so. We have a shortfall of 68,000 units for very low-income residents. Those are generally people that are at 60-50% of very immediate income below. And 51% of the mortgaged homes are cost-burdened.
Ralph, quick question. Can you define from a dollar point of view what the 50-60% is below AMI?
It would depend on family size, but for example, a single income family at 60% is probably going to be around $26,000. Okay. As you all know, and as we've talked about before, I think 8 or 9 out of the top 10 occupations in Broward County are service-related wages, retail, restaurant, hospitality, admin jobs, and we are producing those at a pretty high rate. We're among the 3 county area in South Florida producing more jobs than either West Palm or Miami-Dade, but many of those jobs are in this area, which just adds to our burden as far as the need for affordable housing, particularly rental units. Then you can see what the wage is there, the median annual wage for those kinds of positions. Just a little more data there. We have a unique situation, a number of unique circumstances in Broward in terms of resources and demand. In 2010, the federal government cut the block grant, community development block grant, and the home grants by 40% and 30% respectively. And that same year is when the state totally eliminated the SHIP funding. The federal grants have kind of stayed steady since that time. The state SHIP money has come back to about half its original level. The state continues to slide a big hunk of the housing trust fund over to general fund activities, unfortunately. So we find ourselves 6 years later still around 50% to 60% of the resources that we had in 2010 while the demand continues to rise. There have been a couple of studies, and these come out very regularly. It probably hardly a month goes by that I don't get something either from an academic institution or a professional association like the National Low Income Housing Group. But this is from a study, I'll give you two real quick, from the New York University Furman Center that focused on rental housing nationally. And it basically concluded that South Florida, our metro area, was the worst in the country. And, you know, some people might think, well, that's Miami dragging us down. Well, it's really not. We're hand in glove with Miami in terms of demand, wages, and rental availability and rental costs. One of the striking findings was metro areas with higher rents generally had higher incomes. That would be something like New York City, San Francisco, etc. While areas with lower rents had lower incomes. But South Florida uniquely pops out as a troubling exception with high housing costs without high incomes. So we know that. We know our wages have been stagnant for some period of time. So that was something that came across my desk in March. And then just a couple of weeks ago, there was a new national survey on severely cost-burdened households nationally. And those are households that pay more than 50% of their income on housing, whether it's renter or home ownership. And again, they found that South Florida, Broward County, and Miami-Dade was the worst in the country. And in terms of individual municipalities, this was a little surprising. Miami was 4th worst in the nation, excuse me, with almost 20% of its residents being severely cost burdened. But right behind them was Pembroke Pines was 6th with 19% of their residents, Fort Lauderdale 10th with 18%, Hialeah 11th with 18%, Hollywood 14th with 17%, Pompano Beach 41st at 14%. And this was an analysis of 167 cities. So the bottom line is that we have a troubling and persistent circumstance where we have a very low inventory of affordable, particularly rental units. We really don't have a single business model that works to produce additional units other than the 9% tax credit process, which y'all have heard me talk about, that comes down through Florida Housing. We get a set aside that generates about 100 units a year. I also serve as executive director of the Housing Finance Authority. We're able to cobble together about a deal a year, so we're doing about 200 units a year of new affordable rental at the very low level, at the 60% and below. In contrast, Miami-Dade, which has their own dock stamp, is doing about 1,500 to 2,000 new units a year. Because when their 9% tax credit applications, which we number probably around 10 to 15 a year, they're numbering 80 to 90 a year, come back unfunded, they then turn to their doc stamp resource and they fill the gap, and they're able to do like five or seven more deals, and Ms. Castro is painfully aware of how that affects us in terms of their circumstance. So, bottom line, resources are low. They've been cut severely over the last 6 years. Demand is up, wages are flat, and one final statistic I'll leave with you. Y'all remember Robert Vaughn, who did the work on the methodology. He also does a statewide evaluation of every county in the state as far as affordable housing demand, and you know, he again concludes that Broward is among the worst, Broward and Miami-Dade. But this year, for the first time, he looked at elderly demand. And we are the worst in the state as far as elderly demand for people at very low income levels. We've got a deficiency of 17,000. And as I hear statistics, you know, on business radio, like a million people a day are turning 65 in this country, and that the average retirement income as they retire is 35,000. We know that people will be coming out of jobs where they're not in low-income categories, and immediately the day they retire, they're going into lower, very low-income categories. And if they don't have the benefit of having a home paid off, they're going to be adding to our normal building inventory of people in the workforce. So just something to give some thought to. I think that elderly affordable housing is going to be a tip of kind of a bigger problem that's going to add to the existing circumstance.
Can I ask a few questions? Mm-hmm. First, he alluded to me, and that's because in the Florida Housing Trust, our application came in second this year. I told my board I would have rather come in fifth like last year than come in second, but it is what it is. We will try again this year, and hopefully now that we're second, we can move to first and maybe put some units on the ground somewhere in Broward County soon. But the total proposals to solve this problem on the table, so far as I understand it, are the linkage fee? Yes?
Well, we're down to the bottom of our toolbox, and linkage fee is kind of the last thing left on the table in terms of generating any significant resources.
Right, and the document stamp is a DOA, not going anywhere?
It's in the board's legislative package every year. We can't get out of the batter's box on that.
And that's at the state level?
That's at the state level. The legislators interpret that as a tax, and they're not supporting any new taxes. That's kind of the bottom line on thing. Even though all we're asking for is the ability to put it on as a referendum issue, to ask our constituents if they would support a doc stamp like they have in Miami-Dade.
And we don't have enough juice in Tallahassee to get that done.
No, ma'am, we don't.
Okay, then. That's pretty sad and pathetic, isn't it? What about the CRAs geared towards only redevelopment of attainable workforce housing? Has that been vetted or discussed?
It's been discussed. There really aren't any CRAs that have taken on affordable housing as an initiative. There are some that have done really well, and I would consider them near market rate in terms of their areas and have a tax increment cash flow that could support an affordable housing deal. I won't single anybody out. But
now let's step back. I think you're going in the wrong door. Same church, but wrong door.
Okay.
I would like the county to create a special CRA, especially for cities that don't have CRAs, in the blighted area that are non-TIF today, to give us a TIF for affordable housing component. And it's a win-win because the housing that's in the already blighted area, affordable housing would be an improvement, so nobody's going to complain, right? But the money from the TIF doesn't go to fancy mixed market rate developments, mm-hmm. but strictly towards attainable workforce housing. And there are several TIF-less CRAs, and you could pilot with us, and then after that, we could look around the rest of the county and create TIFs to help generate funds. That way, it's more meaningful for the county to help fund because it's taxpayer dollars that are going to it. It's directed funding as opposed to the county touching the money first and moving it someplace else, right?
Yes, ma'am. We have not had that discussion.
Would you please?
I will be happy to share that with Ms. Henry.
And that way, everybody's in, right? The property owners are in, the businesses are in, everybody's in. So everybody's going to be paying in, which makes everybody feel better about the whole process. See, everybody doesn't want it, I don't want to have to pay for it, the developer doesn't want to pay for it, the cities can't afford it. Okay, let's put everybody in. So using the taxes as a directed funding source is probably the way to go. And again, if you already have an existing CRA, the area's already blighted, nobody's going to get upset about building affordable housing there. The biggest challenge you have to affordable housing is certain cities don't want it in certain places. Some cities don't want it at all, right? So you've got to figure out how to do this and not concentrate it all the time in certain areas. And CRAs tend to be big enough that you don't have to build on a five-square-block area. You can spread it out a bit. So it's just a suggestion. So my concern is, we all keep beating this to death, and the county commission keeps beating it to death, but nobody's really looking for any out-of-the-box solution, how do we fix it? And it's only, last year you were here, it was $55,000, we're now up to $68,000. And I could tell you from the calls I get every day, I get seniors who are absolutely desperate. All they have is Social Security, which is in the $700 range. And I tell them, quite bluntly, you need to think about moving out of South Florida. Seriously. And I'm not joking with them. I don't want them eating cat food or not eating at all. So I tell them, you really need to think about moving out of South Florida. And it's sad, but that's the way it is. And then there's families that call me every day, and there's no place for them either. How about, and this will get everybody excited, and I'm just throwing this out because I was thinking of what I was talking about it, because we're talking about space. How about a luxury house tax? I know nobody likes taxes. But if you're a family of four living in 5,000 square feet and taking up that space, how about paying a little extra tab for that? Boy, that sounds like socialism, which I'm not, I'm just saying. But I'm just throwing some stuff out there. Do you know what I'm saying? Let's offset the haves with the have-nots a little bit, because the haves want their Starbucks coffee, so somebody has to pour it.
Well, there's no doubt that the issue...
A luxury tax is usually what it's called.
...is about resources, and it's about ongoing resources. And, you know, to give you a context, a 100-unit... affordable project like a 9% tax credit project requires a subsidy of about $50,000 a unit.
Right.
So that it pencils out over a long period of time. It keeps that subsidy in place and has a maintenance and cash flow for 15, 20 years. So it's an extraordinary level of funding that would be necessary to start making a dent in the neighborhood of something like Miami-Dade. We're talking $20 to $30 million a year. To start getting at 1,000 units a year. So it's a very difficult circumstance.
But having said that, you mentioned something very important there. The subsidy portion is only $50 a door, $50,000 a door, $50,000. The reality is the developer will bring in the rest, provided they draw the income off the project for so many years till it stabilizes, does whatever. The banks will do the rest. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you have to get $30 million to build a new apartment complex.
That's correct.
You really just need the subsidy to get the developer and the bank to the table. I mean, and so that's really, in the bigger picture, a lot less. And I know it's a challenge, I'm facing it, but it's a lot less than if I had to go out and find $30 million myself,
yeah.
Right?
And yes, ma'am. And again, just for context, if you add up the home, the block grant, and the SHIP funding for all 16 entitlement communities in Broward, it's $7.5 million.
Which is nothing.
Right.
Right.
Very, very little.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Just a point of interest, if the infrastructure sales tax that's being promoted by the MPO passes, that money can be used for affordable housing, among many other things.
I don't know what the funding that would generate would be.
Well, it would be up to the recipient cities to decide how to use the money. That is, I don't want to get into a discussion of it here, but it is an eligible activity, and depends on what passes.
Does anybody else have any ideas about how to fund attainable affordable housing, or any thoughts, suggestions? Yes, Ms. Graham.
Madam Chair, I was going to wait until Mr. Stone finishes his presentation. I didn't know if you were finished or you were just asking a few specific questions.
No, he's done. Yeah.
But I've made a list, and I'd almost rather go to the end so that I don't taint anyone else's questioning or perceptions or comments.
I think we're at the end. I don't think anybody else has any questions.
Okay.
Anybody else have comments?
Okay. Just real quick, and again, just as fast as you can answer this so I don't take up any more time. You mentioned that 2010 cuts to the block grants and all of that. Roughly, what drove that? I mean, we were in the middle of the administration after the president had been elected the first time, so was that Congress that...
That was Congress, the shift in Congress as far as priorities in an effort to cut funding.
Okay, because I actually had seen the study. Couple things real quick. I sent something to Barbara yesterday from the Wall Street Journal back around the 24th or 25th about how, and I'll let her send it to everyone else if you didn't see it, about all these cities now that want to create their own downtown. And of course, they were using specific examples in the New York City regional area and also in San Francisco, but Fort Lauderdale's trying to do that. And it's interesting that everyone has this goal, but there's really not enough warm bodies all over the U.S. to drive the densities that they all want. That's something to look at. It doesn't affect low-income housing or affordable housing, but it just affects the dynamic and the synergy that they're trying to do by getting a lot of people in one area for this live-work-play that everyone seems to think everyone wants. The other thing is, in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, there was an article about Google Cities. I don't know if anyone saw that. Alphabet is going to develop a city from scratch, basically, and they want to implement all of their planning tools and everything else. It's, I don't know if it's going to be a utopia or not, but they're going to obviously avoid all the problems that maybe we face now because of the existing infrastructure. You mentioned about the dock stamps. Dade County got to have those because it was in their charter from way back, but yet Broward can't do that?
Miami-Dade has had a long-standing affordable housing problem. This goes back three decades. They're 30 years into their first dock stamp, and they did it by going to the legislature before there was the Sadowski Act and the SHIP program, and saying, please do this for our county, and that's how that evolved.
Okay, and our chances of getting that are pretty slim. And the only reason why I think that might be a little bit better than the linkage fee is, I mean, I personally would not support a linkage fee, you know, but if I'm only one voter going to the polls on a referendum, I think it would end up having very unintended consequences. And in the end, we're also a very small county. Broward is, are we the smallest county of the 67? But, I mean, we just don't have that much. And I, what we're trying to do...
The largest counties. We're like one of the top 10 largest counties.
No, area.
No, even land-wise, I think we're fairly large.
Well, Palm Beach is like the largest, from what I understand. So when I look at the county and I see what we really don't have all that much. And I think after living here for so long, I don't know if there's a way to be able to create this database, but in that, because what ends up driving the increase in housing costs is taxes, property taxes on non-homesteaded property, and then insurance. We talk about that all the time. And if you go back and you could create a database where you could look at all of the multifamily housing, whether it was four units or less, which comes under the threshold of the state implementing certain oversight by statute, or units over five and higher. But if you could take all of that and actually look at the way the valuations have been devised by the property appraiser, you would see that when I look at the deals that I have to work on, and I look at what these people are paying in taxes, and I look at the cash flow and the rent rolls, I don't know how they're making a profit. I don't know how they do it. But I'm busy because I'm doing that for the people who want to loan money on this stuff. I think that's the biggest problem. The other thing is putting housing in blighted areas, like Madam Chair had suggested. If you have children and they're in schools, if the schools aren't good, it doesn't matter how nice the housing is now in the blighted areas, it may not work. So, I mean, there's so many different factors that have to be looked at the same time concurrently, and just people always asking questions. I mean, we may not solve it, but at least the query is out there for someone to eventually address or prioritize. But I really think the valuation of the properties, as we came out of the recession, all the municipalities touted how their property base had increased by 2% or 5% or whatever. But at the same time, that's a double-edged sword, because as the values have gone up on the non-homesteaded rentals, it's they got to raise the rent. Even if it's just $10 a month or $50 a month, that can maybe break someone who's trying to make ends meet. The other thing is all the line items in the tax bill for the fees. I mean, I know what I pay just living in Fort Lauderdale, but you've got your school board taxes, and if there's any bond deals and things like that, I personally have never looked at a tax bill and compared them for the multifamily properties. That's on the, it's on the property appraiser website. I could do that. But I think if we were all to be realistic and look at that bill for a complex, whether it's 10 units or 110 units, all of a sudden you see why the affordable housing just doesn't work, or why the cash flow isn't what we want it to be. And then lastly, the luxury tax, is that like a value-added tax? Is that, I just, personally, I don't think that would fly, and I don't live in a 5,000-square-foot house, but I just, I think it would be really hard to sell that. I think there's other ways to arrive at the goal, rather than just start plucking those kind of ideas out and saying, let's do it, because right away, it immediately creates a chasm that we'll never bridge then. Those are not even in your toolbox, let alone at the bottom of the toolbox. And then finally, for the affordable housing, even if we give them workforce housing, we can build it and everything works, they still have to pay their electric bill, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And is the water sub-metered, or does everyone get their own meter? Do they, or does it depend how the developer builds the project?
Well, it's a cost that's passed along regardless whether it's individually metered or not.
Okay, so whether it's based on square footage, or, I mean, some complexes I go to, it's based on the square footage. Other times, it's the number of occupants. It all depends how they decide to make their money. But that is the big fallacy, even with people buying their first house, is they look at their mortgage payment is going to include property taxes, insurance, but all of a sudden you have all these other things to add on to the monthly bill. And if you're in Fort Lauderdale, we have a franchise fee tacked onto your FPL bill, which is a kickback to the city. Because in the end, all of this is simply driven by the municipalities wanting revenue. And if we're never going to go back to maybe the 80s or the 90s, when property taxes were lower and the whole valuation base of the county was lower, I don't see how we're ever going to get below rents that are $1,100 a month or $1,250 a month or whatever the threshold would be where you've come up with those calculations so far. But I personally just don't think the linkage fee is a good idea. I would find some other way to try to achieve that.
I'm going to jump in and make a couple comments to her comments. Number one, the CRA in Dania Beach has an A-rated school. Schools in blighted areas actually tend to be better schools because the area is blighted. They tend to get a lot more resources because the student population is socioeconomically poorer than most. Secondly, my idea about the luxury tax, I was trying to stimulate a conversation and ideas and thoughts of anybody who had any possible solutions, as remote and regardless of how crazy they sounded, to solve the problem. We can keep talking about affordable, attainable housing, but we're not solving it yet because we're not finding any solutions yet. I don't know if I support the linkage fee or not. From what I saw in your presentation last time, it didn't generate a lot of money. And if it's not generating a lot of money, I'm not sure it's any good. You could do it. I'll take any drop in the bucket probably in the end, because the point is now, it's not just the insurance and the wages, and it's not even the electric bills and the phone bills. Right now, the demand is for rental housing so that people don't have to pay those things. They don't pay the property tax. It's built into the rent, and I get it. The rent is higher, but that's also because of the units that are available on the ground. The demand is for lower cost units, and we don't have a supply. That's what we're talking about doing with the affordable housing component. So all of that gets thrown out of the door, because the whole purpose of affordable housing complex, which, by the way, the construction today is amazing, and they look as nice, if not nicer, and they're, you know, Cat 5 storm, all that kind of stuff, is just as good as the housing stock that's on the ground now. Matter of fact, one of the solutions that Mr. Sneezak has mentioned, and I totally agree with him, is the better use of modular homes. Now, South Broward in the past, or Broward, has never thought about modular homes because of hurricanes. But the modular homes today are very, very affordable, and they will stand up to a hurricane today because of the way the technology, the construction, the development, everything has changed. My point is, last year we're at 55,000, now we're at 68,000, and nobody has any concrete solutions. And I'm like, I'll throw anything at the dartboard, and that's why I'm asking anybody, do you have any thought that could trigger something else that might be workable? As absurd as it might be, please, don't be shy, don't be afraid. This is a serious problem. And but for the grace of God, go all of us. And if any of you have senior parents or know older people in the county, you're probably already facing it, because they're going to be moving in with you soon because they don't have any other place to live. So I'm trying to stick out anything, because I'm going to take the moment whenever Mr. Stone or anybody steps up to a microphone and talks about attainable, affordable housing in Broward County, because I am now intimately aware of the situation and the problem. So I feel like it's my cause to go out and try to fix it. So I just want to put that on the record. Yes, sir.
I understand in Florida, if you buy a yacht over 35,000, you're tax exempt.
Correct.
Why?
More resources.
But Bernie, it's more than that. Go buy a suite at the BBA.
I'm just saying, but that's just one example. Why? Why, when you take a booth at a ballpark, you're tax exempt, big corporations? Why can't these people pay? You go to the ballpark, buy a ticket, you pay tax. Why are they tax exempt? Why is somebody buying a $6 million yacht tax exempt? Why is somebody belonging to a gun club? Why is the club tax exempt? This is money that could be used for affordable housing. I have nothing against the very rich, but my heart goes out to those who are living on the street because they can't afford, or in their cars, because they can't afford a place to live. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I see it in Deerfield, it tears my heart out that there are people that can't afford a roof over their head. Are we responsible for them? I guess we are, because we're a community. I think earmarking certain taxes for affordable housing and nothing else would be a solution. We can't give the city money and hope they're going to put affordable housing in. Because city says, we need a new community center. That's more important. We want to fix this. That's more important. We want to resand the beaches because it makes money. More important than somebody having a roof over their head. Taxes can be made perhaps even on a county level that are earmarked solely for affordable housing. Not given to the cities, not given to anywhere else, but earmarked specifically for affordable housing. It's the only way you're ever going to solve the problem. It's the only way you're going to raise the money. If you make it too expensive for the builders, they're not going to build it. Why would you build affordable housing when it costs you almost as much today to build nicer housing where you can get double the rent? Or condo and sell them? The answer has to be because we make it affordable enough for builders to acquire the land and put up affordable housing. The only way you're going to do that is to raise revenue. I don't see any other way to raise revenue than finding a way to get rid of loopholes so that a lot of individuals who avoid tax don't avoid it anymore.
Thank you. Mr. DiGiorgio?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to applaud your passion on this issue. I appreciate it very much. It's a very big issue that we're dealing with. There's some studies right now that the city of Pompano Beach is undertaking looking at the affordable housing within the city. And it's very clear that the very low income, the housing out there is just not available. And we talked about 13,000, we talked 55 to 68,000 units in a year, 13,000 unit demand. What Mr. Stone just said about our seniors, that's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And again, no matter how outlandish your proposals may sound, I appreciate you throwing them out there. I don't support the luxury tax, but I do throw it out. I do appreciate you throwing it out there. But I think when we talk about a linkage fee and we come up with a handful, 5-6 homes a year, and our need is increasing by 13,000, we need to think out of the box. I don't have any great solutions for us right now, but I do appreciate you bringing it up on a regular basis. I do hope we really don't continue to just talk about it and take little pieces out of it. I really hope we address the giant problem that it is and make sure that we don't feel like we're doing something because we pass a linkage fee and get 5 or 6 homes a year. Again, it's a little bit, but it doesn't do anything. It does have, as Ms. Graham said, it may have some unintended consequences. So I really hope that we continue to talk about it every chance we get and continue to really throw out the wild and maybe somewhat raucous, they cause a raucous discussion. So
get
thank you.
People's attention. Commissioner Wong and then
And Bernie, to what you said, I mean, the people we have homeless, you know, that continues to grow. We haven't gotten a PIT count for this year. I don't know why that's taking so long. But when you talk about affordable housing, that's why I asked the question. You know, what is that? How do you define that? And it's like, you know, $26,000, $27,000. That's not talking about the homeless. Their, you know, AMI is 30% or below, or zero. I mean, they're not making money. There's no money out there. That's a whole separate issue, and I constantly ask the question of, you know, how many, when we do the set aside, 10% here and there, where's that gone? How many places has that built, and for who? You know, it's even a bigger picture than this, and really, the dock stamps politically doesn't go over, especially in a Democratic county with a Republican-led legislature, and, you know, the northern part of the state is all Republican, so we're probably not going to see that drastically change over the years, but, you know, Gate County is successful because of the dock stamps, and if we had that in Broward County, it would solve a multitude of problems that we have here. The linkage fee is $2 million, that's nothing. You know, and don't forget, everybody has their hand out, the county's going to take administrative fees here and there. But, you know, when we look at the bigger picture, we have to realize that our county, well, it's a very large county, but half of it's all Everglades. There's no development there. There's no taxation over there. So we cram everybody in this thing, so there's only so much land. Land continues to go up. We're seeing that increase again now with all the different buildings, so the value is going to go up. We're going to have the problem. If you look at the Alice report, which I think was kind of commented there with the, you know, asset limited, income constraint, I mean, it's getting worse for us, and it will get worse. Every time we update that report, it will be a lot more difficult for any affordable housing, however it's defined, either workforce, for teachers, for firemen, for people working downtown, serving our restaurants, and nurses that are starting out. I mean, these are some of the people we're talking about. So even taking the homeless piece off the board, you have people that you see every single day when you walk outside, and these are the people maybe tending to your medical needs. These are people who are serving you dinner. It's the one who's putting out the fire. It's the one that's saving you from being robbed. These are some of the other people we're talking about. And if we don't have workforce housing available, how do we fill those key and critical jobs? And I think there has to be a bigger dialogue going on in the county, in the state, because, as been mentioned, South Florida is kind of inverse to what most of the country is and the state itself. You know, you go to Lake County, cheap. Land is cheap. South Florida doesn't have that. Palm Beach. Palm Beach still has some less expensive property in the western areas, but most of it is agricultural, although it sounds like they're opening that up as well. But Broward County right now, we're pretty much built out. Whatever agriculture we have is slowly dissolving. And we got to start looking on a bigger picture and looking. We should have been doing this 10 years ago. I'm sure we did, but there just wasn't that pressure there. And if we want to talk about affordable housing, attainable housing, workforce housing, however it's defined, from the homeless up to the people who are putting out the fire next time you have one, we have to take a serious look at this. And to me, the dock stamp is the way to go. Unfortunately, it's not politically correct. Maybe we need to change that political correctness there for the better of Broward County and South Florida in general.
Bless you. Thank you. Mr. McCauley?
My name is Robert McCulligan of Hallandale. I think one of the things the county lacks, or lacks their involvement or their independence, we need some better input from the CRAs. We need the CRAs to get more involved in affordable housing. The money was allocated from the County Board of Commissioners to CRAs to handle blight and housing. Blight and housing, there seemed to be a misunderstanding with the CRAs with blight and housing and helping on affordable housing. I would even go to the point, the CRAs have been asked many times to attend meetings on affordable housing. This is a critical statement against the CRAs. They need to get more involved in affordable housing. That's all I have to say.
And I just want to emphasize, not all CRAs are funded. There are some TIFLA CRAs out there. And he's absolutely right about the funded ones. Commissioner Gomez?
I more or less have comment and questions. Along with the seniors, which is a very big population that is having trouble making their ends meet as well, when we talk about our low income, we also have children out there. The last amount that I had, I believe it was like 2,500 children who are living in shelters who are going home every day. They go to school every day and they fake it. They try to be that everything's the same as their neighbors, but they don't. They don't go to a house when they're done. So they're also our critical need. And when we worry about our population and our educating of our children, it's a little hard when some of our children are going home without eating and then they don't have the ability to focus on their studies and they're sidetracked from where we are trying to make sure our kids live kids' lives and be happy and become one of those people who contribute to society. So it's one big integrated mess. I do have a question to what was the problem with the dock stamps? I guess I don't understand the history of it, and if this is not the right time, if I could be educated at a later time, I'd appreciate it.
Before you answer that question, I also want to mention a group that nobody's mentioned, and I will tell you, this is where HUD is guiding most of their resources today. And it's not just homeless, it's just regular people, and that's to the vets. This country has more and more vets coming home every day because of all the different wars we've been in the last decade, and because of survivability. You know, in previous wars, a lot of times vets never made it home, especially if they were injured or wounded in some way. Well, today, because again of science, we bring a lot of vets home, either with issues with, you know, brain injury or amputees or things that sometimes hold them back from fulfilling their complete potential in a career environment. And HUD is really, really trying to redirect a lot of funds, vouchers, whatever you want to say, in that direction. Which means families, some of them have families, some don't, but that means it's a whole new world out there as far as people who are trying to afford to live. And if anything else, if somebody should come up with a program in the county somewhere, would be, if you won't want to do a CRA to fund just for anybody, at least put some money on the table for the vets. Because God knows most of them have sacrificed as much as they could for our behalf, and at least we should be able to give them a place to live when they come home. Now, who would like to answer the dock stamp?
Can I, before we move further on the conversation and get an answer to Commissioner Gomez, can we just take a 10-second pause, move the rest of the agenda, let the professionals that are sitting here
Sure.
want to get out of here, get out of here, and we can keep the conversation going.
Unless those
and if they want to stay, they can participate in the conversation.
Well, unless those professionals can help us get money for affordable housing.
No,
just keep your seats.
I understand, but I'm saying we
can't. That's the motion. I'll second it.
I'll move PH1 through PH6, excluding PH4 that was already tabled.
Any other polls?
And we have no speakers.
No speakers. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, carries. Thank you, sir. Very nice. Well done. Yeah, that's because he doesn't care about affordable housing. We won't call names.
Okay. I also just want to add in this commercial interruption that there is a remaining portion of the presentation, so
yes.
I just want to make sure that
we haven't forgotten about Henry. We know.
Okay.
He's gotten up and down a couple times now. Just explain the dock stamps and we'll move on.
Yeah, the issue with the support of the dock stamp really has simply been that we cannot garner a majority of the legislators in Tallahassee to support an initiative that would allow Broward to put it on as a referendum item because they associate it with the tax.
Are we asking to increase it from the 70 cents per hundred, or are we just asking to get a piece of the 70 cents per hundred?
It would be added to the 70 cents.
And is there a number that we've thrown out that's been, or just in general, it's not even letting
Like to model it pretty much the way Miami-Dade does. And I don't remember off the top of my head what their particular cents are, but their program is raising probably in an average year between $20 and $30 million a year for affordable housing.
Miami's at 60 cents per hundred. Okay, thank you.
Also, my understanding was there are certain people or groups that opposed it, and I know the Real Estate Board of Realtors and those originally opposed it. I think they've softened that position in the last maybe 2 or 3 years from my little bit of work I did with the Broward Housing Council. So there's some pretty strong people that felt that it would slow down their industry or their business, which obviously didn't help. But I think, like I said, at least I know the realtors, I believe, have now softened their position on it a little bit. Real quick, and then we got Henry. Yes, ma'am.
Is there a way to compare the volume of properties historically up till now that have come on to the tax rolls that are owned by nonprofits and don't pay property taxes? And I'm not going to single anyone out, but in Fort Lauderdale, I'm aware of a nonprofit entity that has been acquiring property over the years to serve the needs that they have. And we are literally talking about hundreds and hundreds of acres that are no longer on the tax rolls. And at one time, they were businesses, because they were there when I was first aware of them, and they're not anymore. And if there was a way to make a chart or a graph to be able to see this, likewise, the same data information, you would see that instead of everything on a trajectory, slow but sure of increasing, because we add so many buildings to the total in the county, but yet the revenue's not there. So there's something that's inverting the value that we think we're going to be having.
I think the key there is not nonprofits, I think it's tax exemption.
Yes.
Yes, and I think you could probably get that from the property appraiser's office. I think Ms. Begbois writing it down, to find all the parcels in the ownership on the tax exempt properties in Broward County. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Mr. Friedel?
My question was, have we studied good models from other regions in the country that have successfully addressed this problem, maybe with systems we haven't discussed here, like the linkage fee or the luxury tax, as it were?
Yes, sir, we have. The most popular approaches are something like a dedicated revenue source, like a doc stamp, but supplementing that are really two key things. One is, and I hate to say it out loud, linkage fees, but they are much more robust than we're proposing at $1 a square foot. You're talking $15 and $20 a square foot, for example, like Seattle, some of those areas. The other is, because linkage fee is appended to commercial development, on the residential development side, they require percentage set-asides for the residential development community. And this is pretty common in the high-cost areas around the country, where if you have 100-unit development, 15% of those units have to be set aside for affordable housing.
And my final question is, if we did a full-court press and gave you everything that you wanted, what would be the timetable to address the 68,000 or 69,000, you know, units that are missing?
Well, I think...
I know that's a...
Well, a good indicator is the number of tax credit applications we get a year, because the Board of County Commissioners does the tax credit match on everything that's presented. And it's usually between 10 and 15 deals a year. So if we could do 10 years a deal, that would be about 1,000 units a year.
Thank you.
Commissioner Blatner.
Well, just to make the situation worse, in a way, is if you calculate, and it's easy to do, the number of residences in your community that pay no taxes because of homestead exemptions, senior exemptions, and veterans exemptions, and so forth. And I'm not saying those things are wrong, because we passed them, but it takes a lot of money off the tax rolls. And our city, I've forgotten the number now, but it goes up every year. And the people that we're talking about needing help are going to end up living in places where, because of their income, they're not going to pay much, if any, taxes. It just gets worse. The other side of it would be, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had more high-paying jobs in Broward County?
Sure. And lower insurance.
Yeah.
Just for the record, my exploit earlier about a luxury tax on luxury homes, I wasn't serious, just so we're clear on this. I was just trying to stimulate conversation. I don't want everybody who knows me to call me, especially you developer attorneys, and go, what are you thinking? So I'm just saying. And yes, I even have some friends who are wealthy. I don't want them getting on me.
I'm not sure to backpedal quick. You're on that one or Donald Trump on something else he said recently, or you know, somebody like that.
Hey, what's that? If he's going to play the woman's card, deal me in. Okay, I'm a woman. There you have it. Mr. Stezak.
Thank you. I guess even though Mayor Sturmer took away my excuse to shorten my presentation, I will anyway, and I'll even shorten the linkage fee, because I'll just try to reinforce and supplement the good discussion you've already had. And just from the comments I hear and what Ralph and I have learned, you know, we've done a little roadshow about the linkage fee, so we've heard a lot. And this is a big issue, and it's bigger than this board and what county staff or even the county could do. It really, to address this appropriately, really the county would be a partner with the municipalities and the private sector. I mean, just some of the things that Ms. Graham mentioned, it's going to take a lot more than Ralph and I and Bart working with Barbara and you all to come fix it. So you know, we're talking about land use policy, so there are some things we can do, some things the municipalities can do, some things we can do with the private sector. So that's kind of what we're focused on. But we recognize this is a large issue, it's not going away, and it really can take a lot of effort in a bigger stage to come up with some really good solutions. So with that, I'll just I'm going to go back to Broward next, you know. You've seen me, you've seen Ralph, we're talking about some of the things that are perceived as sticks, you know, the methodology change to the policy, the linkage fee. So, you know, as Barbara was mentioning, there's some of the carrots that we're throwing in here too, so you can see the bigger picture. So there's four strategies for the housing, the highlighted strategies. And it's kind of a three-pronged approach. And it's not even talking about the state and the federal government. You know, they have a responsibility for this issue too. So, but for the county plan, I guess we're talking about things that the county, within the county. So obviously the first one is a sustainable funding source. And, you know, obviously I'm going to talk about the linkage fee. That could be a small funding source. Another thing I can mention is the county has a grant program called the Broward Redevelopment Program that funds projects in municipalities for economic development. Right now, that program does not allow that money to be used for affordable housing. That's something talked about with county administration. I think there's some support to include that as part of a funding eligibility for that program. So that's a couple, but certainly need more. I've heard the thing about the sales tax, if that could be, would free up some money. So we're open to other funding sources, but you know, within the county, these are the kind of tools we're doing, and it's very hard to go in and sell something to raise more money, obviously, you know, as we've learned through the linkage fee. Second is to engage the development community. I mean, as was mentioned about, you know, we just had a presentation at our housing council about shipping container housing. They can look like traditional housing. They can look like very industrial housing for hip people. It seems like they did this group who's doing this, they did a financial feasibility study. It shows that there is some promise for that to be introduced in the area if the municipalities want it. The issue they have still is land costs and building code. So we're sending them to the Board of Rules and Appeals, our building code people, to make sure that what they're talking about is something that could meet the county's codes. But they also said that they had a town of Davie official, building official, that was on their group, their advisory group, and he said that he thought it was. So that's a very promising thing, but, you know, modular housing, other types of techniques are also out there. So we'd like to, as part of the policy and the land use plan, is to engage the development community to see if there's some new products out there that we can promote within the county. And of course, these are all would be something subject to municipal approval. We're not trying to just say municipalities have to do this. Another approach is obviously the bonus density. Barbara mentioned that. I'll go into the details about that later. And then also a trying to treat efficiency units or single room occupancy as a lower density. That's something we are promoting or recommending to put in the land use plan, but then it'd be up to the municipalities if they want to do it. So if you don't want to do that, if you don't count efficiencies as less density, you don't have to. It's just something the county would say. The county doesn't have a problem with that. And then the last strategy, obviously, is something municipalities have a role in affordable housing. I think most municipalities recognize that and support that. So, but as things come before the planning council and the county commission in the future for land use amendments, I think our recommendation is to keep some level of review of affordable housing strategies. And one of the reasons I thought Barbara's presentation was really important is because a lot of these recommendations are going to open up housing throughout the county at the municipal level. So you won't even have to come to the county as often anymore to approve land use plan amendments. But when you do, I think the county commission is going to be interested in seeing what municipalities are due to address affordable housing. So that's why that recommendation is staying right now. So as far as implementation, really, again, we're just talking about retaining a version of policy 10707. You know, one thing, I think you're going to see that next month for a public hearing. You know, we've been using that methodology already in some cities, just informally. It's worked fine. So I just throw that out there, something to keep in mind as you think about this when you come back next month. Again, the studio housing, we counted as less dwelling units. One thing that's kind of was touched on by some people is this public land banking program. We've learned over the last few months that some cities are investigating that or have that, and the county is thinking about doing something like that too. We'd like to use the countywide plan and the efforts, the collaborative efforts, to kind of coordinate that a little bit to at least have a clearinghouse to say, you know, you don't have to just know what the Fort Lauderdale program is. You can come to the county and say, well, Fort Lauderdale has one, Davie has one, you know, et cetera. And then the last implementation is just to support the innovative, you know, basically reach out to the development community and see what, you know, what they can offer. Switch to the bonus density formulas. This is kind of based on the formula we already have now, but it's not used because it's tied to the allocation of flexibility. So we're going to take that part of it away. And we've run these by several people in the housing industry, and we got, the only comment we got back that was sort of negative was this tied to flex. So otherwise, it seemed like the response we got was positive. So for moderate income, it's going to be two levels of bonus. One would be two market rate units for every one moderate income unit, and that's moderate, it's up to 120% of median family income. That one we would include areas east of the Intracoastal Waterway. Built into all these recommendations is how you treat the barrier island. And the county's policy right now is to treat the barrier island as very environmentally sensitive and not promote density there. So recommendations right now are to keep it that way. But the bonus would be higher for market rate units for every moderate income unit for anything in an activity center, like regional activity center, or projects that are located close to a rail stop or premium transit stop. So that is very coordinated with, hopefully, with the outcome of this sales tax to promote transportation throughout the county or other efforts that are done to promote development within activity centers along transit corridors. That bonus would not be allowed on the barrier island. And then the bonus gets higher for very low and low income, four market rate for every one low income, and then 6-to-1 if you're in an activity center or near a rail or transit stop. So I think that this has a chance of actually spurring some interest. I guess it would be something you'd have to just adopt and then see what happens, and you can always adjust it. And again, this would not be something just because in the county plan, the cities have to do this. This would be something that a city would have to allocate. This would just be something authorized by the county plan. So that's just about the Broward Next initiatives. Just trying to make the case that there's some carrots to go with some of the sticks we've been talking about, and that it's a large issue and needs to have a collaboration with many others.
Does anybody have any questions on that? Commissioner Gomez.
With the AH3 density, and I saw that it's a may count, it has for efficiencies, studio apartments, studio use,
right.
It's a may.
Right, that's to allow the municipalities to enforce that or not. It's not a requirement by the county plan. We're trying to prevent a developer coming to a municipality and saying, well, the county plan says it's a shall, you have to do this, and you have no authority to say no.
I'm sorry, is it the mandate for building it, or is it the mandate for counting it as there are people in that unit?
The mandate is the way you would treat that type of unit.
But if I grew up in New York City, so efficiencies are all over the place. They're full of people. So it means that there are people who are in their cars. They're using services like the water and the electric. So I don't understand the reasoning behind seeing it as a may counted as a density issue when it actually has people in it, which is a density.
Well, this was, we studied this several years ago and made a rationale that small units, I mean, some of them do have more than one or two people in it, that's true, but generally an efficiency or single room occupancy unit has one or two people in it. So that's a less of an impact usually on facilities and services. That would still have to be dealt with at the municipal level. It's not like you get a free pass. It's just for the purposes of your density, instead of saying that one efficiency counts as one full unit, you can have two efficiencies as counting as a full unit. Just for the purposes of density, nothing else. All the impacts would still have to be considered.
Okay, thank you.
You still have to count the unit in your density. You're giving them the option to count as a half.
That's
going
correct.
Forward, that's all.
Of course.
Because it's a smaller area.
Yes.
So it's always been counted, so.
I'm just hoping it's not having six people living in it because of whatever.
You can have a three-bedroom house with 12 people in it. We can go back to my luxury tax here in a few minutes.
Go ahead, Ms. Graham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things just real quick. You know, at one time, the ULDR for Fort Lauderdale actually had minimum lot sizes for building on, and they actually had minimum square footage for buildings that had to be built. So it's nice to see that maybe they're shifting to a small is better, because that's happening all over the country, it's happening in Japan. Okay, here's my points now about what you just presented. It's a double-edged sword in Fort Lauderdale to be trying to add workforce housing or affordable housing, because our infrastructure has not been upkept and maintained like it should have. And only because you still live in Fort Lauderdale, so I presume you're hearing about all the things that we're wrestling with as to the infrastructure and the water and sewer. I mean, they're either going to do a bond deal, or they've already done a bond for the water and sewer, because we have to maintain what we've got. I don't even know if there is the capacity for the infrastructure to add on more units where they want to use them, especially if we take the flex units now. We no longer limit them to a small area of the city, but now it can be citywide. Because if they already have something on the property and they demolish it and they build something newer, you still have to do the calculations and the impact fees or whatever else if you're increasing the density. That's one thing. As to the land bank issue, and I've been to the land bank conference that the community groups put on. I went to one in Detroit, and it's a good idea. It's just our land is so valuable that, you know, you're not going to get the same results like some of the municipalities and the old legacy cities are in the United States. But I have proposed the land banking for the stormwater issues, and I think we even had a workshop that had been held in one of the smaller rooms back in February, 3 or 4 years ago, because the whole idea of that is if there's nothing on the property or there was something and we take it down, at least we have it for stormwater drainage and percolation. So all of a sudden now we have, it's like a simultaneous equation with 4 or 5 or 6 variables, X, Y, Z, and A, B, and C, because it's not just a matter of adding the housing and increased density. We still have to deal with the stormwater and then have the services, water and sewer, to provide to them. So I don't know if any of that is kind of getting worked into your presentation. Even if we had the funding to go ahead and put the units in Fort Lauderdale, do we have the capacity at the area? Somebody would have to study that in the Public Works Department in Fort Lauderdale. And I don't know if they could do that. And I don't know if they would necessarily be honest in the way they evaluate it, because Fort Lauderdale is desperate for the tax base increase. But at the same time, if we don't already have newer water and sewer infrastructure, or at least not so aged that it can't handle it. On the other hand, our CRA in Fort Lauderdale is getting audited right now. I mean, it was ordered a few months ago, and I don't know where they are, simply because this money that comes in from the taxes, they finally realized it's just not being spent wisely. I mean, the squandering of the tax money is just, it's eye-opening, to say the least. So you got to be judicious with what you have, and if it's not your money, I don't think people are judicious.
I think the only thing I could say, I think that's related to what you're saying, is just to kind of echo what Barbara said earlier, is you can almost assume every recommendation we're making is going to have a provision that says, subject to the availability of adequate public facilities and services. So there's nothing that we're saying or recommending that's going to just say, well, it says you could build housing here, and who cares what the traffic or impacts on water and sewer are. That's not the case. And actually, maybe this was already said, is that when we had the ad hoc committee, there were draft implementation provisions. So you could see like how the bonus density, I'm showing you the formula, but there's also provisions that go with it that are taken basically from the existing one. But it's like saying, well, you can't like triple the density on a piece of property here or there. I mean, there's exemptions for activity centers, but there's a whole bunch of provisions, you know, like, you know, you have to have it restricted for 15 years, that type of thing. And you know, you can't build all your market rate units and then like, oh, I guess we didn't get around to those affordable units. You have to kind of build the affordable units before you finish the market rate units. So those kind of provisions are there, and I recommend that you take a look at that and give us some feedback on those particulars.
Mr. DiGiorgio?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Snezak, I appreciate that presentation. Under age two, I think it's great that we're really thinking about modular units, going back to what our chair stated earlier, and the out-of-the-box thinking with the container units. We've seen them work all over the world. Mm-hmm. So again, it's just kind of a stigma to them. Monroe County is fighting this issue worse than we're fighting the issue, because the land that they have, and they're truly a service-based community,
right,
and they don't have the affordable housing. They've turned to a lot of these alternatives to help fill that gap. We need to start thinking out of the box like that, so I appreciate you putting that in there. Secondly, the other thing is really engaging the development community and working with them on the density bonuses for, especially within the activity centers, I think is an excellent idea. I'm thinking by enabling them to be part of the solution and giving them an alternative to what they're already doing is really going to help this. Those are the types of thinking that I think engages the development community in a very positive way, so I applaud you for that.
And they've been very positive in responding and helping.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, a lot of the resource questions also get addressed at site plan review, too.
Right.
You can't build it if it isn't going to have the basic necessities, and cities then have to evaluate how much water could they supply, how many cars do they want on a road, and that becomes a local issue. But eventually, if you build an inferior product, it's not going to be successful. So to build something, you know, and it'll be done. I'm not saying it won't be done. It will be done. But people then have all of a sudden a lot of affordable housing because nobody will want to live there and it'll become affordable. And that's the irony of that situation. Sir?
I just want to say thank you to Henry and Barbara. Henry has said it a couple of times, but he says it real fast, that there are an awful lot of carrots involved in this process. And yeah, there are some sticks, and Henry and Ralph particularly know that on some of these stick portions, I get vocal on them. But what's great about this conversation, and that's why I said to the professionals that were here, they could stay for the conversation, is, and we keep talking about it, is that how do we get to where we need to be? And is it a project-by-project issue? Is it a block-by-block issue? Is it a city-by-city, or is it the regional issue? And I think that's really, and Ralph knows this because he and I have had these conversations for years. I just find it frustrating when we try to say, this project is going to generate X. And in the scheme of things, it's the proverbial drop of water in the ocean. You know, as we keep saying, the number's now from 55 to 68. And when we politely try to, you know, extract X amount of 3 units out of a developer, is that, what are we really doing other than saying we're doing something? What are we really doing? And so I think it's wonderful to have the conversation, and it's important, but I think there needs to be more of an emphasis put on, and I don't normally say this, what's the government fix for the problem? Because this problem isn't going to be solved by the development community, a developer, or a project. And again, I'm not saying the building bigger government, but the problem is to try to tackle this issue. They're one of the people that are equipped to do it. They have the professionals that deal with it. They know the markets well enough, not that other entities don't. Right. I'm just saying,
right.
Maybe it's great for have 9 people who normally sit here on Tuesdays say what they say, but not go near the solution to the issue. Maybe it's time to say, hey, we need to create a development agency that does this, and that's what its mission is, and here's how we're going to fund it. There's been lots of conversation in the past few weeks about putting a one penny tax on the ballot, whether it's for transportation or infrastructure. And you have certain members of the county commission who turn around and take that conversation and turn it into an affordable housing conversation. Well, no, it's either a transportation penny or it's an infrastructure penny. It's not money to go to affordable housing or other things that this county says it wants to do but can't currently afford to do or properly allocate its resources to do. The question is, if we see the issue, what's the real solution and how do we get there? So I think it's potentially time, and I appreciate the land use issues, and you know I do, and we appreciate the carrots. That doesn't mean that if there's a stick out there, some of us have to occasionally pick up our head and question the stick. Ralph knows next month's meeting when he brings back the methodology.
We can have a
conversation. I may be on the losing side of that conversation. That's okay. But I also think the county commission, in a preview of where we're going to be next month, transmitted it knowing it was coming back here a second time and knowing the Broward Next project was going on. So wherever that conversation ends up. But I just want to say, I think we need to think bigger than we do when we see a project show up here and then try to do what we do within the confines of 1.0707.
Right, add a drop to the bucket each time, that's, the drops are adding up, so.
Not significantly enough that really, you actually see water covering the bottom of the bucket.
Right, we're not even warm.
It's, yeah.
And again, the nice thing about CRAs is tax incremental financing, meaning the change. So the county isn't losing anything, they get the same money they got last year, it's up above, which gets dedicated to affordable housing or attainable housing component.
And Ralph just fell in the book, I couldn't believe I said what I said.
Yeah, there you go. Any other comments? From the staff, any other comments or concerns?
So, I guess I could wrap this up on a happy note and talk about the linkage fee. Just to really, I've shortened it, I've already gone through some slides, I'm not gonna show you, because I think this group already knows, you know, why it was initiated. But just to give you a refresher on the main components and then where we are. The fee level, you know, I showed you this chart before, like the range. Ralph and I are recommending $1 per square foot right now, and that's what's being, gonna be probably put in the draft that the county attorney is preparing. As far as exemptions and waivers, there's a provision in the draft, I've seen a draft, it's not like official yet, so that's why I can't share it with anybody yet, but they consulted with us. And, you know, we're gonna put a waiver in there for some things, but the county's gonna have to identify a funding source for that. So that's a little hurdle that we still have to deal with budget over. And if you have, if the municipality wants to adopt its own linkage fee to retain the money within the city, as long as it's the same as or greater than the county's, that'll be a provision in there. That's your opt-out if you don't wanna do it. At the county level, there's one city that has a linkage fee program right now, it's active, it's Coconut Creek, they'll be exempt from it, because it's just, you know, they should be rewarded for what they've already done, so that'll be their distribution of revenues, talked about options before. Right now, our recommendation is to have the money collected at the county level and be used so that it meets the rational nexus test. And then money would be collected at the environmental review process counter over Government Center West, just like any other impact fee. So where we are is, you know, December is when the County Commission officially initiated this. Since then, Ralph and I, including being at the Planning Council on December 17th, we've had outreach presentations with a number of groups, mostly like Chambers of Commerce people, real estate people, so you can imagine what kind of comments we received. And the ordinance now is officially with the County Attorney's Office, and there, when they issue that, which I expect sometime shortly, we promise to hold a staff level workshop, so we will present it to, you know, we'll notify our interested parties list, including the Planning Council, we'll have a staff level workshop probably in this room or someplace like this, and get comments on the actual draft ordinance. And this will be back before the Planning Council. I guess the earliest that could happen is next month, probably not, June would probably be the earliest, but it may very well happen after the commission's summer break. So that still has to be worked out as far as the timing. But you would have a chance to review as a local planning agency. And we also have to have a county internal local planning agency review. So those will be two hearings before it goes to the county commission. So that's where we are right now as far as the linkage fee. Be happy to answer any questions.
So do you actually have two atoms of hydrogen and one of oxygen to make the drop to go in the bucket? Say we use that, does something there? I mean, the simple question is, I know you put in a dollar. Does that really get us anywhere? I mean, more than are we just saying we did something, it exists. Are we really accomplishing something with that amount? And I'm not saying I'm supporting the linkage, I'm just asking the question.
It would help a little bit, yes. I mean, in some ways we hear from both sides about this is a tax, how could you do this to us? On the other side, maybe we feel guilty we aren't recommending something a little higher to make it mean more. So we try to be balanced.
Understood.
Yes, ma'am.
The other thing is, the linkage fee could probably garner support if it's a small linkage fee, but then we need aggregate sources of the revenue, just like Mayor Sterner said. Whether it's, okay, if we can't do dock stamps, maybe it's something else, but maybe it's also a half penny sales tax. I mean, it can be small things, but when they all add up, we're going to have some money coming in, because once you have a couple of successful projects, it might then change the tide and people will support it. And maybe the economy will be better, maybe the detriment effects that I'm thinking of may not happen. But I think that's something you can sell. I know it doesn't add up to the big millions that you need every year, but it's a start, because we'll still be in the same boat 2 or 3 years from now if we don't have the sources.
I guess one of the best ways, and I won't stick, won't take Chair Blatner's podium on the infrastructure taxes, but let's say the infrastructure tax is put on the ballot in November, and let's say it passes. If I recall my numbers correctly, there would be for at least 30 years, $139, $140 million a year coming to Broward County to use for infrastructure, and how Broward County chooses to use that infrastructure is up to Broward County. So whether it's the transportation tax that the county has proposed sharing 70-30 with the cities, but those are more restrictive dollars for transportation and transportation-related issues compared to the what is currently over 54% of the dais in Broward County have voted in favor of putting on the infrastructure tax, which would be split with the county as well. The county's share of the infrastructure tax would be about $139, $140 million a year to use for how it saw the use of infrastructure dollars. So.
Okay. Anything else? Any other business? Good.
For this item?
Yep, no, for anything.
Wait, do you have, we have two quick things.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Just a real quick.
Yeah, I'll be very quick with this. You have in your, I guess you were provided a brief legislative summary of land use and related legislation. It was not one of the more active years. Minor changes in the DRI process. Some people might be interested in ag lands. There's a very wide definition of what is an agricultural activity, agritourism activity. Provided for those near airports, there's been a little additional authority granted local governments as long as they're consistent with the FDOT provisions and FAA. And for public-private partnerships, which is a big push, there's a state law on it, which is almost incomprehensible. And the legislature decided to also allow cities, this was a nice thing they did, to develop their own types of partnerships without complying with the state law. So you see, if anyone has any questions on them, you can contact me. I'd be happy to give you more information, but nothing really earth-shaking this session.
Thank you.
And just in your backup materials, I have a review of the Charter Review Commission and the subcommittee structure. So I'll continue to keep you all posted on that and what occurs. Mayor Sturmer, at the minimum, is going to join me at Tuesday's Infrastructure Committee, and Mr. McColgan just let me know that he's also going to attend that meeting. I'll send out a summary afterwards. And then also, we just talked about a tentative Broward Next public hearing schedule and discussion, and I will send more information out in an email so that all the members can be privy to that. And I'm going to be sending out some of the other information that you asked for at the meeting.
Thank you. Anything else? Seeing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.